session number 18493, reel 15.
Mr. Arnold Lupton, reel 15.
Yes, we were quite confident in coming up against the Germans, that we could probably, well, let's say, run rings around them. But in actual fact, on this occasion where we were, when our track was knocked off, we weren't in a position to run rings around them. We just had to sit there and slog it out. But we still felt, you know, we can cope with whatever there is.
What did the Germans look like as they approached? I mean, were they approaching you fast, as a very scattered or relatively compact mass? I mean, just trying to get a feel of how it looked to you.
Well, on this occasion, where we were, they were fairly compact. I couldn't say what spacing there was between their tanks, but not more than about 100 yards at the most, probably less than that. And the speed they were advancing at was not fast either, because they were moving uphill. I should think it was only 10, generally about 10 miles an hour, which was why we were able to fire so many shots at them probably before they knocked our track off. And we also had only light, well, fairly light stuff. I mean, 2-pounders, they, even with the shell casing, they weren't very heavy things. They could be wanged in and fired pretty quickly, different from getting yourself behind a 75 millimeter or something.
What tank were you in at this time? Was this your this an A-10?
No, this was an A-13.
A-13.
Yes. And then the replacement we got was, well, that was the A-13 cruiser. The replacement we got was a Crusader from, I don't know, another regiment altogether. I can't remember which one. I think it was 3rd Tanks. Not sure. But they must have been equipped with these tanks, which basically was the same. Just the outer shape mainly was different.
Yes, that's an interesting point. I mean, first of all, you get a vehicle that seems to be from an entirely different unit. And secondly, it's a completely different vehicle. I mean, I know you weren't driving it. You were a gunner in it. But I would have thought there might have been a difference in the way you drove the things.
Apparently it didn't cause Bert any trouble anyway. He took over just as if he was in the same tank we'd been in for many weeks. But he was an old tank man, well, 1937 or something, and he'd probably driven quite a few vehicles by that time. And so long as you got a gearbox and accelerator, clutch, brake, whatever, it was a vehicle.
How about from your point of view, from gunnery?
Gunnery was really the same too. The tank traverse, the elevation, depression of the gun and all that kind of thing, they were all in the basically the same as the cruiser A-13.
Sighting,
yes, that too was the same on that. I think they were just making these in a different shape of turret, but otherwise everything was the same.
So you went forward to join another troop of your regiment, was this?
Yes. eventually, I think, not the end of that day, but the end of the next day, I think it became a composite battalion even. Not just 2nd Tanks, it was 2nd, 3rd, 5th, or whoever was there all together, because there were so few tanks left by then that were usable.
Did this? Did you still? You were explaining how you felt confident at the beginning of the battle. I mean, here you are, starting off as 3 regiments and ending up as a composite of 1.
Mm.
Did that knock your confidence in any way?
Well, it did rather, yes, to put it mildly. Yes, because you didn't know who was at the other end of the radio. Really, I mean, you weren't talking to people, or the commander wasn't talking to people that he'd been used to, and the sort of movement of the troops had to be different, because I forget who was in charge at that time. They had a different idea of how to approach an attack or a withdrawal or whatever. So it was slightly different, but you were still there to do what you could do. And that was it. And mind you, a large number of the infantry had also by then been smashed about. And so the whole force was considerably reduced by that time, and it was just a question of withdrawal and protecting. We were mainly sort of protecting the withdrawal of infantry and so on, not really attacking just for the sake of attacking, you would say.
It was a fairly long and protracted battle, Crusader, but how did it seem to you? Did it peter out, or was there a clear-cut point at which you realised that was it and it was over?
It really, as far as we were concerned, petered out, I would say. We just hadn't got anything more to that we could usefully do. Well, not in the way that it should have been done, or could be done, perhaps, if you had a full force. And so, yes, it really sort of petered out, and everybody had to gradually withdraw and let the Germans come on, which they didn't do for very far either, because they'd been pretty well battered in this thing. It was just one of those things that disappeared into smoke, you could say.
So where did you pull back to at the end of the battle?
Well, we pulled back over the wire again into Egypt from Libya. And got back to, well, Mirza Matru was about as far as the railway line went then, I think. And we got back to Mirza and then took a train back to Alexandria at that time. Sidi Bish again and all its fleas, and a delightful place. It was quite a nice bit of coast, but the camp was pretty appalling, flea-ridden. It did change from the bugs, I suppose.
this was a particular delight of Sidi Bish, was it?
Yes, it was. In Cairo, we'd mainly had bugs, but with the trouble to us. Anyway, we got back there and eventually got everybody together again, and then got moved a bit further out towards Suez. I can't remember what they call that patch of dust. If it had a name, it must have had some kind of name. And then we started getting supplied with new tanks and so on. Well, new to us. They were the American Stuarts with their seven-cylinder radial Pratt & Whitney engines, which in fact turned out to be about as good as any could be in the circumstances that we went on to, because we stayed over Christmas getting all acclimatized to these tanks and arming them up and getting them ready, and then were told that we would be leaving Egypt and going out to a more jungle country, which was quite a big difference after 18 months or more of sand and desert. So we had to, we didn't really need to get acclimatized to where we were going. Well, we did when we got there, but I mean, out in this bit of desert, no. It was an extremely cold time through the winter. The winter usually is cold there. I have photographs showing people all wrapped up in great coats and enjoying perhaps a fleeting glimpse of the sun coming through the rain, whilst loading these Stuarts onto the tracks to go down to Suez, no, port side again.
Before you get on, just covering off the changeover to Stuarts, when you reconvened after the battle, after Crusader, what sort of casualties had you got? Because you'd had to make up a composite regiment from the whole brigade,
yes,
by the sounds of it. So what sort of casualties had the second had?
Well, in men, I suppose it could have been 10, 15%, maybe 100 men. Some, I can't remember how many killed, the rest wounded. Perhaps a little more than 100. As a full battalion, we should have had about anywhere between 600 and 700. So it was quite a largish percentage who were knocked out of action in one way or the other. It was more that we had no vehicles, or scarcely any left.
How did the relatively high casualty rate, and what sort of effect did that have on everyone?
Well, people were more sad than there had been on previous occasions, because there was a bigger casualty rate. But again, it was one of those things that after a few days it went away, and you just waited until you got a new supply of men coming in, and tried to see how you got on with them and how they would be distributed amongst tank crews and other needs around the battalion.
So they started rearming you, and you got Stuarts.
Yes.
What was the general feeling about them? How were they liked or disliked?
Well, they were liked insofar as they had about an inch and a half of armour on the front, which we had never had before. The rest of it was normal, like we had had before, around the other parts of the tank. The guns were 37 millimetre instead of, what are 2 pounders, 40 millimetre, I think. So they were more or less the same. And they had a man alongside the driver, like in the old A-10s, with a machine gun. In the turret, they had a machine gun alongside the 37mm. And as far as the driver was concerned, well, you had to learn a different system in a way. These dated back, I think, to about 1923 or something, Stuart. So they were a very old pattern of tank, and they were, they seemed high in relation to length. The turret seemed a long way up in relation to the length of the vehicle itself. You still had things like manual traverse, as far as I remember, of the turret. You still had the same way of firing the guns, and you still had the same way of steering the tanks with tiller bars. But it was the engine which was the, I will say, the problem, perhaps. Being aero engines, they ran on high-octane fuel, which we were very fortunate eventually we could get that without any trouble. But the starting up, it had a, I think it was a pneumatic start, which got the cylinders being, or the, yes, the cylinders being moved before you inserted the petrol to get, put a proper start on the engine. And if you didn't do this right, and you got a surplus of petrol in your bottom cylinder or cylinders, you were liable to explode, more or less. The tank just fired up straight away. I mean, literally fired up. So the drivers had to learn how to start up these things. Keeping them going was all right. They just roared away behind you, but it was the startup was the main thing that people had to learn. Using the tanks in the desert wasn't any great problem. It was only when we got to where we were going that, well, probably they were still the better type of vehicle to have there than to have cruisers or anything like that. But I'll come to that anyway a bit later on.
So did you actually lose any or many tanks through this start-up routine?
No, we were very lucky. They apparently had good tuition, and there was only the odd, I should think, maybe two out of all of them, or in the battalion, which had this trouble. And fortunately, in each case, the fire protection equipment on board was able to cope with it.
What was that?
Well, it was like a fire extinguisher, which you carry around in your car nowadays, more or less, with a dry content, which was situated in that near that part of the engine in the back compartment, for which the driver could press a button and operate straight away. When, because he wouldn't necessarily know that his thing was on fire, he'd have to be told by somebody, either the commander or somebody else around about, to press that button, you know, and get it out.
What was the gunnery like?
The gunnery was easy after gunnery in our other tanks. The only thing was that, again, he seemed to be high up in the air, so that any variation in the ground you were driving on affected the positioning of the gun more in these tanks, I thought, than in our British cruiser tanks.
Did you manage to get much live firing and gunnery practice in?
Yes, we did have a fair bit of that, enough to get you acclimatized to the firing and the loading. Oh, and most of these tanks too had radios in, which, so the loader was also occupied with radio as well as loading the guns. And we still had the intercom, the one in the tank itself, for the commander to speak to the various people, driver, gunner, and front gunner, and so on.
Was this still a crew of five then?
This was a crew of five, yes.
Three in the turret, driver, and
front gunner.
Lap gunner.
Yeah.
And on the gunnery, were you still practicing gunnery on the move?
Yes. Yes, which was a good thing, because, as I say, with it being a different balance to the vehicle, it was a good thing to get more used to that whilst firing on the move. Although, I would say in most cases, probably the gunnery which we did eventually was not so much on the move as it had been in the desert.
What kind of ammunition had the 37 got? I mean, I understand that at this stage the 2-pounder was still only solid shot.
Yes.
And was that the same for the 37?
Yes, we only had solid shot on that. Some tracer. But all solid. I suppose they couldn't make, or they hadn't been able to make this type of shot with high explosive or smoke possibilities built in.
Did you, you never used these, from your description earlier, outline description, you never used these vehicles in action in the desert, is that correct?
Yes, we never did. There were other people who had been equipped with them, and I think they found them quite good. Just how they compared with ours, I don't know. At least they couldn't have had a shot through the front from 3,000 yards with a 6-pounder. Because the front armour was good on them. Track-wise, yeah, they had rubber tracks, I think, or rubber mounted on the metal tracks. That was something else we had to learn, was to deal with that. Slightly different from what we'd been used to. But it was still basically the same kind of problem and work. And the other thing was, what was it? Just a moment. Sorry. The other thing was mainly the movement of the tank as it went over the ground, because with our longer and I forget what they called the mounting, those four big wheels on the cruisers, it was a much smoother movement if you went over bumps and things. With these it was more sudden as you went over the bumps and sprays, the lumps of rock and whatever. So you had to get used to it being a bit more of a pitch and toss movement than in our cruisers.
What about speed?
Speed was still quite good. You could get up about 30, I would say, maximum, when conditions allowed it. Yes.
So, you are re-equipped, learned how to use the thing. How did you learn about the move away from Egypt?
Well, we had a we had a big parade, and we made sure that there were no listening ears around about, and we were told that we were going out east, and we were at that time heading for Singapore. And so we had to do slightly different painting of these tanks to go out to this more jungly country. It had a bit more green on it and so on, and the brown was browner instead of being just a very pale, almost not brown. It became a browner brown, and black was still there, green because of leaves and so on in jungle. And we did that before we left. We also got jabs before we left, and so we could, as you might say, get over the jabs whilst we were sailing out to the east. We stopped on the way at Colombo. We had a couple of days in Colombo when we could go ashore, those who were off duty, go ashore and do whatever they wanted. And there were one or two American naval ships in Colombo Harbour, and they were very pleasant. People could have their first tastes of Coke and things like that to see what they were like. But on shore it was very interesting, Colombo, although it was a bit too hot even then, which was February, I think, because that's just about as near to the equator as you can get. And so it was pretty hot, and you didn't really want to do a great amount if you got ashore, apart from sup a few beers to try and cool you down, or eat some pineapple, which was going extremely cheap.
Were you travelling in the same ship as your vehicles, or were you split again?
No, the vehicles had gone on one or possibly two old cargo ships. They only had one man per vehicle on board, and they sailed ahead of us. We went on it was really ready for the Knacker's Yard, this thing that we got on, I think, the Ascanius. I'm sure if there hadn't been a war on, it would have been broken up years before anyway, but it did get us out across the sea, at least. But it was a very uncomfortable ship, not equipped for the number of people who were on board. And they did feed us all right. But if you didn't want to feel like death in the night, you managed to get
hammock
up on deck, and you either hung it